यमुना तीरावन चारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा राम रामा हरे हरे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवते उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 22 वर्स नंबर 7। प्लीज रिपीट आफ्टर मी। दिष्ट्या त्वयानुशिष्टो हम क्रतश्चानुग्रहो महान् अपावृतय कर्णरंध्रैर् जुष्टादिष्ट्योर्शतिर्गिरः दिष्ट्या त्वयानुशिष्टोऽहम् कृतश्चानुग्रहो महान् अपावृतय कर्णरंध्रैर् जुष्टादिष्ट्यो शतिर्गिरः दिष्ट्या त्वयानुशिष्टोऽहम् कृतश्चानुग्रहो महान् अपावृतय कर्णरन्ध्रैर् जुष्टादिष्ट्यो शतिर्गिरः। दिष्ट्या त्वयानुशिष्टोऽहम् कृतश्चानुग्रहो महान् आवृतय कर्णरन्ध्रैर् दिष्ट्या त्वयानुशिष्टोऽहम् कृतश्चानुग्रहो महान् अपावृतय कर्णरन्ध्रैर् जुष्टादिष्ट्यो शतिर्गिरः दिष्ट्या त्वयानुशिष्टोऽहम् कृतश्चानुग्रहो महान् अपावृताय कर्णरंध्रैर जुष्टा दिष्ट्यो शतिर्गिराः दिष्ट्या लकिली त्वया बाय यू अनुशिष्टः इंस्ट्रक्टेड अहम् आय कृतः बेस्टोड च एंड अनुग्रहः फेवर महान Great, apavritai, open, karnarandhrai, with the holes of the ears, jushta, received, dishtya, by good fortune, ushatihi, pure, giraha, words. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. I have fortunately been instructed by you, and thus great favor has been bestowed upon me. I thank God that I have listened with open ears to your pure words. Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami has given directions in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu on how to accept a bona fide spiritual master and how to deal with him. First, the desiring candidate must find a bona fide spiritual master, and then he must very eagerly receive instructions from him and execute them. This is reciprocal service. A bona fide spiritual master or saintly person always desires to elevate a common man who comes to him, because everyone is under the delusion of Maya and is forgetful of his prime duty, Krishna consciousness. A saintly person always desires that everyone become a saintly person. It is the function of a saintly person to invoke Krishna consciousness in every forgetful common man. Manu said that since he was advised and instructed by Kardama Muni, he was very much favored. He considered himself lucky to receive the message by oral reception. It is especially mentioned here that one should be very inquisitive to hear with open ears from the authorized source of the bona fide spiritual master. How is one to receive? One should receive the transcendental message by oral reception. The word karnarandhre means through the holes of the ears. The favor of the spiritual master is not received through any other part of the body but the ears. This does not mean, however, that the spiritual master gives a particular type of mantra through the ears in exchange for some dollars. And if the man meditates on that, he achieves perfection and becomes God within 6 months. Such reception through the ears is bogus. The real fact is that a bona fide spiritual master knows the nature of a particular man and what sort of duties he can perform in Krishna consciousness. And he instructs him in that way. He instructs him through the ear, not privately, but publicly. You are fit for such and such work in Krishna consciousness. You can act this way. One person is advised to act in Krishna consciousness by working in the deity's room. Another is advised to act in Krishna consciousness by performing editorial work. Another is advised to do preaching work. And another is advised to carry out Krishna consciousness in the cooking department. There are different departments of activity in Krishna consciousness, and a spiritual master, knowing the particular ability of a particular man, trains him in such a way that by his tendency to act, he becomes perfect. Bhagavad Gita makes it clear that one can attain the highest perfection of his spiritual life simply by offering service according to his ability, just as Arjuna served Krishna by his ability in the military art. Arjuna offered his service fully as a military man, and he became perfect. Similarly, an artist can attain perfection simply by performing artistic work under the direction of the spiritual master. If one is a literary man, he can write articles and poetry for the service of the Lord under the direction of the spiritual master. One has to receive the message of the spiritual master regarding how to act in one's capacity, for the spiritual master is expert in giving such instructions. This combination, the instruction of the spiritual master and the faithful execution of the instruction by the disciple, makes the entire process perfect. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in his explanation of the verse in Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, that one who wants to be certain to achieve spiritual success must take the instruction from the spiritual master as to what his particular function is. He should faithfully try to execute that particular instruction and should consider that his life and soul. The faithful execution of the instruction which he receives from the spiritual master is the only duty of a disciple, and that will bring him perfection. One should be very careful to receive the message from the spiritual master through the ears and execute it faithfully. That will make one's life successful. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschate Deshatarine. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I first offer my respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada carried the message of Srimad Bhagavatam on the Jaladuta. It was his major possession while he was traveling from India to the West. And he instilled the culture of Srimad Bhagavatam in all of us. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the mood of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is the mood of giving the highest to the lowest. I was reflecting that we have tutors outside of school. And in India, we used to call them tuition classes. And teachers would specifically instruct students who were not able to perform so well in the school, they would give them personal attention. So they would invite these students at their houses, in their living spaces, and give them personal instruction. And through that personal instruction, the student was also able to witness the life of the teacher, what happens. This is the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that in the previous yugas, there were paramahamsas, the process was available, the world was not as agitated. Kali Yuga, unfortunately, Manda Sumanda Mateyo, Manda Bhagya Yupadritaha, is so agitated that Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, looks at the souls of this world and says that I have to personally go and bring them to my inner chambers, otherwise they won't be able to learn. And this mood was carried by Srila Prabhupada of giving the highest to the lowest. Because we are at the lowest position, Srila Prabhupada very kindly elevates us to the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and we can get to the highest. I was reflecting that this Vyasasana is a representation of the highest. It's the seat of Vyasa. It's from where Vyasadeva used to speak and it's from where our Guru Parampara continues and the teaching continues. And the fact that I'm sitting here means the highest is given to the lowest. And that's the principle that Srila Prabhupada carried of giving the highest teachings that are available of worship of Srimati Radharani and Shri Krishna in their Nikunja, in their innermost deepest services, in the innermost deepest mantras. So my deepest gratitude to Srila Prabhupada. I also offer my heartfelt obeisances and express my deepest gratitude to my spiritual master for encouraging me, for guiding me through his words and through his example so that I can follow along. And also my heartfelt gratitude to my Guru Varga, my parents, and my friends and family members for their support. And last but not the least, my deepest obeisances to the leadership, management, and the congregation of New Ramanriti Temple. I'm still in awe from the amazing Gaurapurnima celebration that took place here. That I was explaining to my father who's visiting right now that the machinery of this temple works so beautifully that the festival goes on, there's all kinds of things happening, and next morning at 4:30, at 4 a.m., the temple is pristine, clean, and is available for the next day. All the devotees work in such beautiful harmony in their service under this amazing leadership and guidance that it inspires Krishna consciousness in the hearts of devotees as well as the visitors. So my deepest gratitude to all of you for being part of such an amazing community. Okay, so let's look at this verse. Could you focus on the translation, Prabhu, of this verse? Can you even tell me what stands out to you in this verse? What are some things that are standing out to you? Just speak it out, yeah. Oral reception through the holes of the ears. Very good. Anyone else? What's standing out to you from just the verse, just the translation? Yes. From the spiritual master. Thank you. So what's happening in this verse is spoken by who? Who's speaking this verse? Manu. Right? So Manu, Emperor Manu, he's the most powerful man in the universe at that point in time. Right? He stands before the forest sage Kardama and he declares himself fortunate. Right? And he's not saying he's fortunate because of his kingdom, his army, his dynasty. Why is he saying he's fortunate? He's fortunate because he was allowed to hear. So this verse reveals that the real currency of the spiritual life is not position, not wealth, not even renunciation. It is the quality of hearing. Right? Manu teaches us that humility is not a performance, but a prerequisite only when we recognize the speaker's purity and receive sacred sound as instruction that can become our transformation. He's giving us the example that what we are receiving as a gift, the greatest gift that we can receive from anyone is sound, pure sound entering through our open ears. This transcendental vibration cleanses our heart, rewires our consciousness, and reconnects the soul to its source. This is what primarily Srila Prabhupada came to the West to give, and he brought sound, Shabda Brahman, in the form of the Mahamantra, in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, that transformed millions and still continues to do so. So that's the kind of thesis statement of this verse, right? That's the kind of the source of the core idea of this verse. Now, last week when I spoke on Friday, on 3.22.4, we looked at the architecture of divine protection, right? How Brahmanas and Kshatriyas protect each other, and the Lord, who is both cause and effect, protects through their cooperation. Prabhupada calls it the idea of bhakti karya, devotional work embedded in the social order. Now, this is three verses later from that. And now Manu at this point is not philosophizing, right? At that point, he was talking about Varnashram. He was talking about how Brahmanas or Kshatriyas are engaging with each other. He has heard Kardama's words at this point in time. And at this point, what he's expressing is raw, humble, overflowing gratitude. Right? And we have to always remember the context. He's the emperor of the world. He's not a minor official. He's not a local chieftain. Right? He is the sovereign ruler of all creation at that time. The books Manu Samhita and Manu Smriti are written by him, after him. And he comes to a remote hermitage to meet a forest. And in that conversation, he stops being a father arranging a marriage and he becomes a student receiving the instruction. Right? For instance, let's say the most powerful person on the planet, the biggest tech billionaire, whose net worth exceeds the GDP of multiple nations, right? Let's say travels to Alachua and meets somebody, meets a devotee, meets a sage here. But instead of commanding attention and demanding things, he offers his gratitude. Not with security details or camera crews, but with genuine humility. Right? And he says that I am so fortunate that you have bestowed this great favor upon me. Thank God I was allowed to hear your words. That's what's happening in this verse. The quality that Manu is bringing in this verse is the idea of humility, gratitude, recognition of another's purity, and the willingness to be instructed. Right? So the key point number one that I wanted to bring up is that the most powerful man in creation considers himself fortunate, not because of his power, but because he was allowed to hear. And he redefines this as true fortune. True fortune means the ability to hear. Now let's look at this verse. Prabhu, if you can scroll up to the verse, word by word for this, because this is a very interesting verse and every word of Bhagavatam reveals so powerfully. So the first word is dishtya, right? Luckily. It also means by great fortune. It also means by divine arrangement. This is the first word of this verse that Manu speaks, and it sets the entire tone for the whole verse. Now, dishtya, the word in Sanskrit, comes from the word dishta, which means fortune, fate, divine dispensation. The word dish, which means to point, to show, or to direct. It's also related in English to the concept of destiny, you know, which is pointed, the fortune. Sometimes people say destiny. That which is has been pointed out and or directed by the divine hand. That's what it means. So it's the cognate, and in Latin, destinare. Anyway, so the idea being, dishtya carries, the word carries the idea that fortune is not random. Some people think of luck as random. Oh, maybe I'll get lucky. But what this verse, what this word implies is that fortune is not random. It is directed. It is shown. It is established by a higher intelligence. Right? This refers to the arrangement of the Lord himself. That's why the devotees consider this idea that fortune means when the Lord guides us. Think about it. Manu is the emperor, right? He could have sent a messenger that, fetch Kardama, I have a daughter ready to be married. He could have summoned Kardama to his palace. He could have arranged the marriage by a decree. But the Lord arranged it in such a way that when Kardama prayed, Manu personally went there, sat at the feet of the sage and heard. Right? So this arrangement is equally important as the instruction. His Holiness Gaur Govinda Swami's biography is titled. Anyone know what's the title of his biography? When Good Fortune Arises. And it's the same idea. He writes about it, or his disciples write about that when Gaur Govinda Maharaj met Srila Prabhupada, that was his great fortune of that meeting. And it's that same feeling that is evoked, that the encounter with a pure soul is never accidental. It is arranged. Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach, right? It's the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna. So the meeting is the fortune, and the hearing is the grace or the gift of that fortune. Even the Brihat Bhagavatamrita describes that even among millions of pious activities, the chance to hear from a realized soul stands supreme. It cannot be bought by any money or any power. It is arranged by the mercy of the Supreme. And that's what Manu is expressing. With all the wealth, power, everything in his capacity, and yet he is grateful for the ability to hear. Now in the next line of this verse, he says, Tvaya anushishta aham. Right? So it's like a passive voice. He's saying, instructed by you, I am. So he starts with the words, Tvaya, by you, anushishtaha, instructed, taught or guided, aham, I am. Now notice the word order also. I found it so fascinating in this verse. Tvaya, the sage comes first. The sage is the subject, you. The instruction is the next. And I comes the last in the way Manu has phrased this. It's so beautiful, the Srimad Bhagavatam, when we look at how these are phrased. That the guru and his teaching is taking precedence and I'm just receiving it. It's my grace. It's my fortune. Not that I have come here, now talk to me. Because you're speaking, you are instruction, and I am the subordinate listener. In the word anushishtaha, right, instructed, the word shishtaha means to be taught or to be educated. And the word anu is a prefix, right? It means following after or in accordance, or means following alongside. So it adds, the prefix adds the quality of the word itself, right? So anu word is used in a lot of Sanskrit words. Translation is called as anuvad. Vad means to speak. Anu becomes speaking after. That means it's the translation that it follows. We call bhav and anubhav, right? That means that it becomes the experience and something alongside the experience that comes. In love, we call rag and anurag. The idea becomes that it becomes a deep love. It becomes an ever-increasing attachment that flows continuously. It's followed by it. So similarly, the idea of anushishta does not mean that Manu's being taught, just taught. What it means is that taught in a way that I can follow you. I am receiving this instruction from you, Kardama, in a way that I can follow it along. So it's like a personalized guidance that creates a path. That's what Srila Prabhupada is referencing in the purport also, right? That a spiritual master knows the nature of a particular man and what sorts of duty he can perform. That kind of instruction is called anushishta. That Srila Prabhupada, when he references that you work in the DT room, you attain perfection by doing editorial work. So that's the idea of Anushishtaha. It's the custom-fitted instruction that is being offered here. Now, in the third line, he says, Kritascha Anugraha Mahan. And great favor has been bestowed. Kritas, right? The word kritaha means done or bestowed or made. The root word is kra. It's the same word in English as create. Kritaha, create. It's the same idea, which means that a great fortune has been created. And again, if we see the word, what's the word? Anugraha. We see that word graha and the prefix anu is present again in this verse. Now, graha, anugraha means, graha means to seize or to accept. And anugraha means that a mercy that is given, but I'm seizing it and I'm accepting that mercy. It's a mercy that comes towards the recipient. So anugraha is not just passive mercy that this acharya is present and he's giving us mercy. It means that it's the mercy that actively pursues you, that flows towards the one who is ready, like a river running downhill. The beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam right here. That anugraha means the mercy that is running towards you. That's what the mercy of a spiritual master is. And mahan, great, this is great. The cognate in English is magnus, which means the word magnificent, magnanimous. It's the same root as mahan, maha, great. So, O Acharya, this great mercy is flowing from you and seizing me. It's taking me away. That's what the word anugraha here means. And the last line, apravite karna randhair. That means that apravite, apavrite means uncovered or open. Right? So, karna randhair. That means the holes of the ears. Now, one may think the ears are actually always open. Other senses that we have, eyes and other senses are still covered, but the ears are always open. So why is he saying that my ears are open when they are naturally open? Why is Manu saying that? Exactly. That means that the ears can be covered, and Manu specifically as a person who is this great leader of the world, great emperor of the world, could have obstructions such as pride, prejudice, distraction, material desire, offenses, all of that. But he is putting it to the side, or he does not have it, and he's hearing with full attention, right? It's the randhra, it's a passage, just like we have a hose, we have a pipe from which water goes and cleans out everything. The sound enters the ear and cleans out all the dust and everything accumulated. That's why it's shaped that way. The ear is designed to receive, right? The ear is meant in such a way that nothing comes out of it, only things can go in. And that's why Rupa Goswami says, Shravanam is the first step in spiritual life, the idea of receiving. In Srimad Bhagavatam 285, Shukdev Goswami says, Pravishta karna randrena swanam bhava saroruham dhunoti shamalam krishna salilasya yathasharat. Right? That the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna enters through the holes of the ears. Pravishta karna randrena, it's the same word that's in this verse. Karna randrena, that it enters and sits on the lotus flower of the devotee's loving relationship. The lotus flower of the loving relationship that we have. And what does it do? It cleanses the dust of material association. So when we say that, oh, I've been hearing this, but the transformation is not happening, have we established that lotus flower of relationship in the heart? That, my Lord, I am in the position of receptivity. Now please speak. When we bow down in front of our acharyas in that capacity, that's when the dhunoti shamalam process happens. The purification happens regardless of it. However, in that position, we receive the most. And that's what Manu is describing in this verse. That the passage is open, Krishna, your acharya, your representative is speaking and I'm hearing. And it's sitting and it's cleansing me. And the last line of this verse, Jushta dishtyo shatir giraha. Jushta, that means I received it, I relished it, I'm enjoying it. Dishti appears again, right? Great fortune that we talk about, dish, the direction, the destiny. And ushati, pure giraha, pure words that are coming from you. I like to look at etymology of the words and where they come from. And I found that the word giraha, the root is gi. And in Latin, the cognate is gario, which means to chatter. So it's the same word, which becomes carol in English for some interesting reason. So what is Manu saying? He's saying that these pure words that are coming, I'm not just receiving them, I'm relishing them, I'm savoring them, I'm enjoying them. That's what the idea of Jushta translates. And Prabhupada very interestingly translates this in his translation as, I thank God. He's saying this, that I thank God, right? It's not directly from the verse, but Prabhupada's translation is, I thank God. Going back to the idea of destiny, which means it's given, dishtya, it's arranged by a divine power which points you in a particular direction. And that is what Srila Prabhupada is evoking, that this is significant. Manu is not thanking Kardama alone, that thank you for speaking these words. Thank God that I was able to hear this, for arranging this situation that I'm able to hear this. The sage is the instrument, God is the musician. And words are the music. That's essentially what's happening here. In the word parampara, we talk about the word parampara, right? Para means the highest quality of sound that is coming from one teacher to the other teacher, right? Param also means supreme, the supreme sound that just flows from one supreme container, from one container who can communicate that message to the other container. Srila Prabhupada often used to say that I'm just a postman. I'm a postman, I'm carrying the message. And that's the idea, that the message is pure. I may be impure, but the message is pure. And that's the idea, that through this channel of parampara, this sound gets transmitted. And that's what's happening in this example also. That when Manu hears Kardama, he's hearing that para sound. He's hearing that spiritual vibration that has been traveling from one acharya, one teacher, to the other teacher. And now into his own ear holes, right? And then the last thing he says is that it's pure, right? It's pure. So again, it's not tinted by personal agenda. It's spoken for the benefit of the hearer, right? Impure words originate, which may serve the speaker's interest, maybe for advertising, you know, designed to create a desire where none exists. The words of propaganda, these are impure words, the words of gossip, right? The words designed to elevate the speaker, diminish the audience, diminish the subject, political speeches that can stir anger, that can stir division, right? These are impure sounds that agitate the heart. But the words of Bhagavatam, the words of the Gita, the words of the holy name, they're transmitted through this chain. And what do they become? These are Ushati Giraha, the pure sounds. So every word in this verse reveals a quality, right? Dishtya, recognition of divine arrangement. Anushishtaha, that means that my readiness to follow. Anugraha, that means that I'm receiving this grace. Aparavita Karnarandhra, deep unconditioned hearing. And Ushita Giraha, discerning pure from the impure, that's coming my way. That's the power of a verse, just one verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is just one verse of Srimad Bhagavatam that we can open, that we can understand. How powerful the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is. This just goes on to show that every word, we might think that, or I might think that I have read this verse. Yeah, yeah, I'm aware of the translation. Krishna Tulya Bhagavat Vibhu Sarvashraya Prati Shloke Prati Akshare Nana Arthakaya. I referenced this last time also. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after giving the 61 explanations of Atmaram verse, says that this Bhagavat is equivalent to Krishna. And because it is equivalent to Krishna, just because Krishna is forever expanding, forever increasing, this Bhagavat is the same. You can keep looking at into it, dive deep into one verse, and derive numerous understandings and meanings and glorification of the Supreme. And that's the power of Srimad Bhagavatam here. All right. One thing that I really liked about this verse, which is at the core for me, and I express this again, is the idea of Manu being exalted, his wife Shatarupa being equally exalted, right? The ancient law book mentioning his name. They rule everything. And yet he's sitting there. And he's framing himself as the one. Even in the verse prior to this verse, he says that the Kshatriyas need the Brahmana. He is a Kshatriya. Kardama is the Brahmana. And he says that the Kshatriyas need the Brahmana. He's genuinely overwhelmed by what he has heard. And this is a world, this is a man who has everything to offer, who can offer anything in the world, considers himself lucky to just receive pure words. And the idea of the humility that Manu is depicting in this verse. And that's why Prabhupada translates it as, I thank God. Thank God that I was able to come here and hear your words. God has bestowed this great favor upon me. Because if you think of the dynamic that is existing there, he's the father, he's the big father with a daughter, and he's looking at a prospective son-in-law, that this person, there is a power dynamic that is naturally inherent there. He puts it all to the aside. He puts that aside and he reverses the dynamic entirely. And he says that you are speaking to me and it's my fortune. Now, because of that, please accept my daughter. I'm looking for a suitable person. So I was thinking that Manu embodies the idea of Trinadapi Sunichena. Trinadapi Sunichena, the highest emperor taking the lowest position and accepting that I'm just here. I'm lower than the grass. He's prostrating in front of the sage. He's tolerant like a tree. He's not demanding anything. He's receiving. And he's devoid of any false prestige. And at that point, he naturally offers his gratitude and humility for the ability to hear that comes here. Now, when Prabhupada goes to the purport, Prabhupada talks about the idea of a bona fide spiritual master, right? Bona fide, Latin, bona, good, fide, fide, means in good faith, trust, reliability, as opposed to malafide, in bad faith, with the intent to deceive versus with the intent to give something good. And Prabhupada says that a saintly person makes other saintly persons, right? So the guru's fides, faithfulness, right? It flows in two directions. One direction is that the guru is faithful to the parampara, those above him. And the other direction is below, to the disciples, that he's transmitting as it is. So he transmits without distortion and he acts for the disciples' welfare. And so that's guru's flow, the faith, the idea of bona fide flows in two directions. So bona fide quality is not something we verify with certificates. We understand it, that how is the message that is being transmitted. You feel it in the words of the speaker, and Manu felt it. And he could taste the purity and we could see the transformation of his heart. Now Prabhupada makes an interesting comment in the purport. He says that the favor of spiritual master is not received through any other parts, but the ears, not the eyes, not the hands, not the mind, but the ears. As I was speaking, that all the other parts we can close, the mouth can stop, the hand can withdraw, the eyes can close, but the ear is always open. Even in sleep, the ear hears, right? That's why it's the whole of the ear through which the sound travels. It's by design, it's designed to receive everything. And that's why the Vedic sound, Shabda Brahman, comes through the ears. It's established through Shabda Pramana, through the sound, because that's something that can always flow into us. And it is said in our creation philosophy that when the creation happens, the first element that gets created is sound. From sound comes the other elements, right? In terms of material elements. So sound is older than air, older than fire, older than water, older than earth. So when we are hearing the transcendental sound of the Bhagavatam and of Mahamantra, it's the oldest sounds that we are hearing. It's the primordial sounds of creation. That's what we sing in the morning in Darshanarthi. Govindam Adipurusham. It's one of the oldest prayers, prayers that are coming and that are entering in our ears. So that's why the transcendental vibrations, Prabhupada writes in multiple purports, but 1.5.38, that the transcendental vibration is Shabda Brahman. So when Kardama is speaking and Manu is hearing, it's not just a transfer of data, transfer of information. It's the transfer of that primordial divine sound that happens between a guru and disciple. The idea of sound is also fascinating, because if you think of sound, the idea of sound begins with the para sound, right? Which is the highest sound, parampara, the word para, which is the highest sound that is flowing. Now this sound, when it flows, when it enters the ears, it takes the form which Brihadari Muni describes as pashyanti, which means that it takes the form of a vision. It is said that the sages see the truth, right? Krishna writes in the Bhagavatam also, that the sages are able to see the truth. So these great sages, when they hear the sound, first they're able to see it, then it takes the form of madhyama, which means that it takes a conceptual meaning form, and then it becomes vaikari, which means it becomes the audible form. So when he's writing, he's talking about the idea that how the sound carries and how the sound travels. He's talking about the idea that how this divine sound takes the meaning, and that's why it goes from the ears and translates. I'm referencing the work by a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. I forgot his initiated name. His name is Guy Beck. He's written a book called Sonic Theology. Anyone know his? Santosh, yes, thank you. He's written an incredible book called Sonic Theology, The Idea of Description of Sound, which goes on to show, if you want to understand how does mantra, by hearing, how does it transform us? It's the highest sound. It invokes a vision into our hearts. Then it takes the meaning, and then it comes out and it purifies us. And that's the last part is what we physically hear with our ears. Sometimes our acharyas say that you may hear, but if it's not coming from the right source, you might hear the vibration of the words, but the actual potency won't be there. Because the madhyama, the pashyanti, and the para elements of the sound are not present. So that's why hearing with open ears also means, when Manu says that I'm putting all these aside, that means that I'm able to perceive that divinity that is being communicated through the sound that's coming to me. I was relating it to when we, in our personal relationships, there are levels of hearing in our personal relationships also. When you talk to someone, sometimes when you can only hear what they're talking about, which is just the what level of hearing, that yeah, I hear you, what you're saying. But then a deeper level of hearing is the how level of hearing, which means that we also hear how they're being when they're talking about something. They're being active, they're being agitated, they're being a little nervous. And we can tune ourselves to understand, to get a little more understanding of how somebody's being when they're talking. And then the last level of the sound that we can hear from another person is the why level of sound, which means that we get to starting to get a sense of intuition that there is maybe some fear here, maybe there's some trust here, maybe there's some excitement here. So even in regular mundane hearing, to improve the quality of our relationships, we should practice these three levels of hearing. What is the person saying, which is the words we are hearing, how they're being, and then why? Why is it coming? What sense am I getting from you? A lot of, in therapy and practices, even in corporate, people practice this idea of reflective listening. And we listen the what, the how, and the why. And then we communicate it back. And that establishes the connection and the relationship, because we have heard the depths of that person, that I get it, what you're trying to say. And that's the idea of this open-hearted hearing, that once we open our spiritual ears, once we open our ears in such a way, then the same spiritual sound, the same Maha Mantra, it is described by our acharyas that by hearing just one word, they're dancing. Nitai Goranga bole nacharya marman. My mind is starting to dance. Rupa Goswami writes, I can have thousands of ears, you know, and thousands of tongues to chant and to hear. How is it that the same mantra that we hear every day, we chant every day, they're describing all these transformations, but not us? Because perhaps we are not practicing that level of hearing. That level of hearing that's needed, because the potency is there in the sound. What is it that I can do? What is it that I can do to be an attentive hearer, an attentive listener, so that these words can do that same magic what the acharyas are experiencing, whatever is happening for them? Because it's the same practice. The other thing Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport, which is fascinating, he says that the spiritual master instructs the disciple in public. It's very fascinating, Prabhupada says. He doesn't say in private. He says, in public, all of our movement is the idea of, our entire movement is established with the idea of taking things to the public. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broke the storehouse of divine love, the seva of Radha and Krishna in their kunjas, which is a beautiful kunja, the beautiful place that we are seeing here that Srila Prabhupada established in every temple of the world, and our devotees go and wake Krishna and Radharani up. They put them to bed. They see them. They serve them, which is the service of the gopis, which was done, which was not known to the world. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broke open and opened it to the public. The Maha Mantra, which was being chanted, is broke open. The hearts of the gopis are given out in the public by the mercy of Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. It's coming to everyone. So the idea of taking something to the public, that's why we take Sankirtan to the public. That's why we take our books to the public. The idea being that when it's out in the open, the transformation happens and others can see. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, Swamiji, have you performed any magic? What's magic can you perform? You know, and Prabhupada said that I have transformed the hippies into happies. It's because publicly the power of the Maha Mantra can be witnessed, can be seen, and that's why it comes out in public. And Srila Prabhupada says, that's why we don't do the practice of secret mantras and secret practices. It's all out in the open. And when we hear, truly hear, through the way of proper, authentic, attentive hearing, then that transformation will happen into the hearts of us also. Okay. Krishna also says, Shrinvatam swakatha Krishna, punya shravana kirtana, ridhayantastohi abhadrani, vidunoti suhratsitam, right? Krishna says that I cleanse the heart of the hearer, the one who is actually hearing. So, despite hearing Mahamantra, it will always clear us. But when we hear, when we open our capacity, then imagine the transformation that can happen in our lives. Just through hearing. And that's what Srila Prabhupada is talking about. Prabhupada also, in the last few minutes of this class, he also touches upon the idea of what you're talking about, the spiritual master. That he begins the purport with the idea that the spiritual master bestows mercy on the desiring candidate. He doesn't say on the candidate, on the desiring candidate. That means that there is an effort on the side of the candidate also, which is what we see exhibited in the life of Manu here. In his example, he is the desiring candidate here. So it has to be both. And then the spiritual master gives the instruction and the desiring candidate executes the instruction. And Prabhupada says those two is perfection. It's not just that the spiritual master is instructing, the disciple is not doing anything about the instruction. Or the spiritual master is not instructing, but the disciple is trying to do something. It has to be both. It has to be both. And this principle is present throughout our tradition, right? That this is how it works. And Prabhupada calls it reciprocal service in the purport. It's a two-way street that goes on. And Prabhupada finally says that the spiritual master engages the disciple in various services, right? So there was a memoir I was reading. I forgot whose memoir it was, but one elderly disciple of Prabhupada, I don't think he's on the planet anymore. He was writing in his memoir that Srila Prabhupada made Brahmananda Prabhu the president because he was a natural leader, captain of the football team, president of his high school class. He made Satswarup Maharaj the secretary, intellectual, excellent writer, right? He engaged Jayananda as a natural organizer, as a natural worker for Rath Yatra, Govinda Dasi for deity worship, natural artistic ability. He engaged so many, Hayagriva Prabhu in editing. So he always identified the tendency and channeled it, that how can you channel the tendency towards Krishna? And he did it publicly. Now his letters and his writings are all publicly available on what these instructions were. So similarly, the principle for us is that how can I channel my own tendency? And it goes back to the idea of Varnashram that I talked about last class, that Manu begins this whole conversation with Kardama, is that what is my nature? What is my true nature? And if I express that desire to my spiritual master, and if I hear from my spiritual master, and if I come to an understanding, then I can engage my proclivity for us in serving Krishna. And if you don't know what your proclivity is, and if you think that I don't know what it is, what activities make you lose track of time? What do people consistently ask you to help with? What would you do for Krishna if nobody noticed? What frustrates you about things that are being done? These are the ways which we can see. And these are the ways which we can present to our teachers, our gurus, our spiritual teachers. And they can guide us and instruct us that, yes, this is a good vocation for you. Please do it. All right. And finally, to conclude it all together, to bring the whole verse together, the verse begins with the idea of Manu talking about dishtya, right? He's talking about that this encounter with you is not accidental, it's divinely arranged, right? So Manu recognizes the great fortune he has received in life. Then he says, I am willing to be instructed, anushishta. I'm surrendering the ego's need to already know all the master, and I'm genuinely receiving. Then he accepts the grace that Kardama is offering, anugraha. Then he's practicing open hearing, apavrita karna randrer, and then he's expressing his gratitude to the source. So we can see that how these, it's like a cascading quality in this verse that it's describing, right? I recognize the great fortune that is present before me. I surrender myself in front of the great fortune. I see this as a great, this instruction that is coming as great gift. I'm hearing to it through my open ears. And I'm expressing gratitude to God for that. That's what's happening in this verse. So bringing it all together, we started with an emperor who becomes a student, Swayambhuva Manu, ruler of all creation, stands before a forest sage and declares himself fortunate. Not because of a political alliance or anything, just because he was allowed to hear. We explored the idea of transformative hearing, right? The anatomy of the ear as the most receptive organ, the Vedic science of Shabda Brahman and how it goes, the four levels of sound, and the four stages of speech, and the idea of a bona fide spiritual master who gives the instruction, who is truthful, bona fide, faithful to the ones above him, faithful to the ones below him. The spiritual master identifying the person's nature, directing it publicly towards Krishna, and the disciple's faithful execution of that. And Manu's cascading qualities in this verse. Recognizing the fortune that is present before me, my willingness to be instructed, acknowledgement of the grace from that instruction, openly hearing the instruction and expressing my gratitude to God. All right. So the final nine points were these. And then a few reflections for us is that just like a disciple, the guru gives pure words and the disciple gives open ears and God arranges that meeting. Similarly, God, by the will of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this meeting has been arranged of us with Srila Prabhupada. And the words that Srila Prabhupada is speaking, all these pure words. He's given his books, he has given his writings, he has given his lectures, he has given his disciples. His disciples have given their disciples. We have all this powerful, amazing culture that is present before us. Are we sitting with open ears? Just like Manu did. Are we seeing the 5 points of grace? Are we recognizing this great fortune, just like Manu recognizes that what's present before me? Are we willing to be instructed by these books, by the writings, by the words of acharyas? Are we acknowledging the grace that is present in our life? Are we practicing open hearing? And are we offering our gratitude to God because of all that is being offered to us? That's the sum and summary of this verse that Manu is speaking to Kardama Muni. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there are any reflections, corrections, questions, then I'm happy to take it. Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu. Could you please repeat the ways by which one can identify their propensity or what to put before their spiritual master, that maybe this is what I should be doing or whatever, or that a spiritual master recognizes that?
Thank you.
There were about four different...
So these are some practical questions that I've thought about. One question, because if you might ask, or if somebody might ask that, what is it that I'm good at? I don't know. I can do this, I can do that. Then think of, if you have $100 billion available right now, what would you be doing? Where would you be? How would you be spending your day? You have all the money in the world. You don't need to work for money. What would you be doing? What are some activities that make you lose track of time? Oh, I can just make flowers for the deities all day long. I don't need to do anything else. Arjuna, for him, it was military training. There are some kids I see in the temple room who are always, even when they're sitting, they're walking, they're always playing mridanga. It's always their hand moves. So what are some activities that I can find that are natural to my nature, that is there? Mother Urmila in her book Career Dharma talks a lot about this, that what are some propensities? Am I interested in reading, writing? One great way to find out is look at your expenditure. Where are you spending the most money on? That sometimes also gives you a clue. My case, and my wife can attest to it, I spend a lot on learning. I have all kinds of subscriptions to learning courses and podcasts, and always just eager for this idea of information and learning. And so I can see my nature is Brahminical nature, and in the nature of I want to educate myself more and share what I'm learning and what I'm discovering. I've been doing it from since I was a kid, going through encyclopedias. That used to be my favorite books. So we can find out what is an activity that makes us lose track of time. If money is not a consideration, what would I be doing? What do people consistently ask me to help with? What are they asking? What do they come to you for? Because they can sometimes see, they can see the essence that, oh, this person is great at giving guidance, counsel. Oh, can you help me with this? Then they can see that, oh, they're always coming to me for things like this. What would I do for Krishna if nobody noticed? If no one notices? And if it's just me and the deities, or me and Krishna, what would I be doing for him? What would I be offering to Krishna? That also reveals the deeper inclination that, oh, you know what? Actually, Krishna, I'll be cleaning. Then that reveals something. What frustrates me the most about how things are done? That can also reveal that. What frustrates me about how things are done? About how things are done in all that, oh, if only people did it this way. What is it revealing in your heart? What is it coming for you? So there are all these ways I can find out my propensity. And there is an example of the person who invented the Balaram Mridangas. Does anyone know? What's his name? Ishan Prabhu. So there's a conversation of Srila Prabhupada and Ishan Prabhu. Right? Ishan Prabhu goes to Srila Prabhupada and asks that, Prabhupada, I want to serve you. What can I do for you? And Prabhupada responds, that's not how it works. You tell me, what do you want to do for me? And he says, oh, I can actually make mridangas that don't break. And Prabhupada said, that's your service. So sometimes that also comes from us. So that's the example of what is it in our heart and offering it that many people sometimes, I don't know what to do. Perhaps you do. It's the same idea of hearing. I don't hear. I don't know what's happening. Perhaps get a layer deeper. Reflect and understand, and it may reveal your nature. And then perhaps your spiritual masters can sometimes see it. Or you can engage in a dialogue, in a conversation that, oh, this is a service for me, and try it out. So hopefully that helps. Thank you. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Very nice class. One thing is, what was the name of the book that you mentioned? Was it
Sonic Theology?
Sonic Theology.
Yeah, Sonic Theology by Guy Beck, Santosh Beck. Prabhu. Mm-hmm. And there is a course also on it by the what's the school in London, the devotee school in Oxford, Oxford Center for Hindu Studies. Mm-hmm. They also have a Sonic Theology course that is taught by him. Mm-hmm. And he goes through classical ragas, and he explains what transformation happens in our heart and how is that sound traveling in our hearts. Mm. Actually, I didn't quote, but I did research. There's research done in science where they would make music through various instruments and sprinkle sand, and the sand would start taking shape of different kinds, which goes on to show that how sound affects matter. His Holiness Devamrita Swami, in his book Searching for Vedic India, has whole chapters dedicated to how the idea of sound helped in the creation of the pyramids and all these incredible things that happened, that there's elements of sound through it. And in the past, how the curses, all the benedictions of somebody can bring transformation or ruination in someone's life. We can see the example of Sringi just says something and then the curse comes, and of course the Bhagavatam speaks and the impact of Srimad Bhagavatam on the heart. So it's all a culture of sound. We live in this world. That's why my Gurudev often says, he doesn't say you are here, H-E-R-E. He says you are here, H-E-A-R. So we are always listening and we are always in presence of our sounds. And these sounds can make or break our consciousness. So the sounds we associate with are the sounds that dictate and guide our future and take us towards that dishtya, the destiny that we're going towards. Thank you for your question.
Thank you. And one other thing, I was listening to a class by His Holiness Bhakti Dhir Damodar Swami, and it was titled, Who is the Deity of Your Mind?
Mm.
It's very, of your mind. And so this is kind of making me think about that, just how, you know, I could be sitting here looking like I'm listening very intently, but all this other stuff is going on in my head. So yeah, so thank you very much for bringing out the importance of hearing attentively.
Thank you. And that's what points to the four levels of sound, that the sound from the ear, when it takes that form of vision, and that's where it can still remain in our heart. For instance, if I just say Radharaman, what comes up in your mind? The mind straight goes to Vrindavan, and we see the deity of Radharaman. So that's why the sound can bring out these visions for us. So the quality of sound we associate with can dictate what happens in our heads. That's why Satatam Kirtayanto Mam, constantly chant my glories. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time today. Hare Krishna.